Well, good evening. Welcome back once again to One Step Beyond. Now, this evening, we're going to be, as I said, doing the third installment of the CIA connection to this country's savings and loan crisis. At this point, they're upping the estimates of just how much this is likely to cost the American taxpayer. They're upping the estimates to something like, the estimates at this point range from $325 to $500 billion. That's B, folks. And who knows, at this point it might ultimately hit a trillion. That is, at this point, larger than the defense budget, and it is rapidly becoming a major factor in this country's already shaky economics. And this evening we're going to be taking a look at some of the ongoing revelations coming both out of the Houston Post, primarily, also to a certain extent out of an excellent book that we're going to be looking at this evening called Inside Job, The Looting of America's Savings and Loans. And ultimately, next week, we're going to be taking a look at, and for weeks to come, at some intersecting revelations coming from the Napa Sentinel, which continues to explore some of the fascinating connections around the drug tug Lenvest case. And some of those connections are now intersecting directly and in a potentially very significant way with the CIA-SNL connection. I'm going to give you a brief rundown of what we're going to be listening to this evening. Then we're going to again break ever so briefly for music by way of punctuation. And then batten the hatches, because we're going to be... Well, actually, you're going to be listening and I'm going to be reading. I was going to say we're going to be reading this evening. No, actually, I'm going to be reading, you're going to be listening and hopefully learning. And hopefully recording, too, because a lot of the stuff that you're going to be hearing this evening will be real dense. And I would certainly recommend, to the maximum extent possible, that you record tonight's broadcast. Certainly these archive shows are intended specifically for recording. Now, we're going to begin this evening by taking a look at one of the many articles coming out of the Houston Post that is being done by a very enterprising and, frankly, heroic investigative reporter called Pete Brewton, his last name Brewton. And we're going to begin by taking a look at one of the articles he wrote, which intersects directly with an article that we looked at in part one of our CIA-SNL archive show, and that looks at the many connections, or some of the connections, I should say, of Global International Airlines and a fellow named Farhad Azima. We're going to take a look at some more of those connections to other air proprietaries, perhaps CIA air proprietaries, certainly airlines and aviation parts companies that, or aircraft parts companies that appear to have functioned in connection with the CIA or other elements of our national security establishment, and many of the evidentiary tributaries leading into, through, around, and out of this particular article that we're going to be looking at intersect directly with the Iran-Contra scandal and or elements thereof. Now, we're going to be taking a look tonight in this particular article at companies called Response Air, Ransom Aviation, and the last names of those may be incorrect. Sometimes aircraft, airlines, aviation, and air service get confused in my own mind. But Ransom Air is one of the organizations we're going to be looking at. Response Air, those are going to intersect in turn with Global International Airways. We're going to take a look at connections between Buffalo Airways and the failures of a couple of SNLs, the Empire and Sunbelt Savings. And in this first article, we're going to look at a couple of names which are going to be coming back throughout the course of our investigation of the CIA connection to the SNL crisis. Those names are Herman K. Beeb, B-E-E-B-E. I believe that's how it's pronounced. I've never heard it spoken aloud. Again, the spelling is Herman K. Beeb, B-E-E-B-E. Maybe it's B-B, but we're going to pronounce it Beeb. I really don't know what the correct pronunciation is. We're also going to be taking a look at a fellow named Mario Renda, a fellow we looked at in connection with Global before. And Mario Renda is a person who will serve to unite a number of different connections to run through the CIA-SNL crisis. Then we're going to move to the book, Inside Job, The Looting of America's Savings and Loan. And after looking at some of the many connections between the operations of Farhad Azima and company and the Iran-Contra scandal, we're going to take a look at the untimely demise and violent death of a fellow named William LeMaster, and he was the fellow who put not only Farhad Azima but also Anthony Russo, an organized or reputed organized crime figure that we looked at in part one, on the board of Global International Airways, described in the first part of this series by investigators as being the air arm for EATSCO. That was a company put together by Edwin Wilson, Thomas Kleins, Theodore Shackley and company, many of the key players in the Iran-Contra scandal, in the so-called secret team, as the Christie Institute refers to them as. And again, we looked at those people and EATSCO in both Radio Free America shows number 4 and 30. We're going to take a look at William LeMaster and how he died. And in the book, Inside Job, The Looting of America's Savings and Loan, we'll look at his role in putting Azima and Russo on the board of Global International, and we'll take a look at what happened when the enterprise, so to speak, Global Airways, began to unravel and investigators began to look into it. After that, we're going to stick with the book. We'll take a short musical break after looking at the violent and untimely death of William LeMaster. We're then going to take a look. We're going to stick with the book Inside Job, The Looting of America's Savings and Loan. And we're going to take a look at some connections between some of the most glitzy names of the fast-paced world of 80s finance, I guess you could say, go-go 80s finance. We're going to take a look at names like Charles Keating, Michael Milken, Drexel Burnham Lambert, and we're going to take a look at intersections between these various stars of the 80s, I guess you could say, stars of 80s finance, in particular people involved around the junk bonds industry. We're going to take a look at intersections between those elements and some of the CIA SNL connections that we're focusing on in this particular series. It's worth noting that the world of covert operations, the world of drug smuggling on behalf of the Contras by the National Security Establishment, that world does intersect directly with the world of Wall Street as portrayed in the recent popular motion picture. There are direct connections between names like Drexel Burnham Lambert, the aforementioned Charles Keating, Michael Milken, the junk bond star of Drexel Burnham Lambert, and many of the elements that we're talking about this evening. By way of understanding, by way of fixing some of these relationships in a way that's easy to remember or easier to remember, we're going to take a look at an organization, or actually a company called Southmark. Southmark was one of the institutions that was involved in many of the machinations surrounding the failures of many of this country's savings and loan institutions. And Southmark is one of the unifying elements in the milieu, the combined intelligence and organized crime milieu that we're looking at this evening. And one of the major elements that we're going to be looking at this evening concerns the failure of the Silverado Savings and Loan in Denver, Colorado. That is significant for a number of reasons, not the least of which is the fact that a member of the board of directors during the key period of operations vis-a-vis the failure of Silverado, that director is Neil Bush, the son of Vice President, a former Vice President, now President, of course, and former CIA Director George Bush. I was thinking of the fact that he was Vice President at the time this was going on and a presidential candidate. The failure of the Silverado Savings and Loan intersects directly not only with institutions like the junk bond operations of Drexel Burnham Lambert, some of the people surrounding Messrs. Keating, Charles Keating, that is, known for his part in the failure of the Lincoln Savings and Loan, some of the people surrounding Michael Milken. Many of these same elements intersect directly with the failure of the Silverado Savings and Loan, as do elements involved not only with the CIA, but specifically elements implicated in one facet or another of the Contra support effort and or the Iran-Contra scandal. And one of the unifying elements, and again, the broadcast this evening is going to involve a dizzying tangle of names and elements and relationships. One of the things which I think can help to fix this in people's minds and help to provide sort of a mental tab by which to keep an eye on some of the elements as they flow through these various savings and loan failures and some of these operations. That company is called Southmark. And we're going to begin by looking again from Inside Job, The Looting of American Savings and Loan, at Southmark's connection to Charles Keating, to a company called MDC, which is a home building company out of Denver. And there, all of those elements and how they relate to the Silverado Savings and Loan failure will occupy a key portion of our broadcast this evening. Now, again, remember the name Herman K. Beebe, B-E-E-B-E, because Herman K. Beebe and Southmark can be associated very closely. Southmark helped Beebe in a lot of his operations, and Beebe, in turn, one of the names that winds throughout so many of the different things we're going to be looking at this evening. We're going to take a look at this company, Southmark, the person who is its head, Mr. Phillips, and just how Southmark relates to Herman K. Beebe, one of the key figures in the CIA SNL failures, or the CIA connection to the SNL failures, I should say. And we're going to look, too, at how Southmark and Beebe relate to the junk bond industry, people associated with Drexel Burnham Lambert, Charles Keating, and it's worth noting that Senator Cranston is taking a lot of heat for his relationship to Charles Keating, and appropriately so. But the same amount of attention is not being paid to the many very significant connections between the elements in and around the current administration, notably Neil Bush and other people in or close to this administration. A lot of those elements are very close to Charles Keating as well, and we're not hearing about these connections to Keating, the Lincoln savings and loan failure, and so forth. However, we are going to look at some of those relationships this evening. Again, the next element that we're going to be looking at here concerns the relationship between Mr. Beebe, Messrs. Beebe, Phillips, Keating, Milken, and the Drexel Burnham Lambert organization, which just went down largely as a result of its junk bond operations. And again, we're going to look at how all of these things intersect with Southmark. Then we're going to take a look at more of the operations of Southmark and how they relate to the Silverado Savings and Loan, again staying with the book Inside Job. And specifically, we're going to take a look at one of the savings and loans that went down, the San Jacinto Bank in Houston, Texas. Now, San Jacinto, in turn, was heavily involved with MDC, and MDC's operations are inseparable from those of the Silverado Savings and Loan. And MDC's chairman, a man named Bill Walters, very, very close to and involved with Neil Bush. One of the significant aspects of Southmark, again, it's very clearly involved with elements of organized crime, and it also appears to intersect in a significant way with the U.S. National Security Establishment. We're going to take a look at connecting links between Southmark and not only Carlos Marcello, a key New Orleans mafioso and a person who figures very prominently in the assassination of President Kennedy. He was one of the key organized crime links to that particular assassination. That assassination has been wrongly portrayed as an organized crime operation. Organized crime was heavily involved in the assassination of President Kennedy, but tragically for us, that was not the only element involved, nor even the most important element involved. However, Carlos Marcello and other members of the syndicate were involved, and their participation is not to be either overlooked or diminished under the circumstances. We're going to take a look at reports, again, from Inside Job of connections not only between Southmark and Carlos Marcello, but also between people involved with Southmark and Major General John Singlau, the key person involved with both the World Anti-Communist League and the Contra support effort. We're going to take a look, too, at a fellow named... Well, actually, after that, we're going to take a look specifically at how Southmark and MDC intersect with the Silverado Savings and Loan. This, again, from Inside Job. After that, we're going to leave Inside Job, again, subtitled The Looting of America's Savings and Loans, and we're going to take a look at one of the great articles that's been turned out by Pete Bruton of the Houston Post. And this specifically details the interrelationship between Neil Bush and a number of different people, the aforementioned Herman K. Beebe, elements associated with the aforementioned Southmark, and we're basically going to be introduced to six names in this article, I think, are the key ones to remember. A fellow named Mizell, the aforementioned Bill Walters, a fellow named Good, a fellow named Brownstein. All of those are people involved with the business milieu of Neil Bush, and they in turn intersect with people like Herman K. Beebe and others. We're going to hear about a fellow named Frank Corson, a reputed CIA money mule, that is to say a person who trucks money around for the CIA, and his connections both to elements of the SNL crisis and to the Silverado operations as well. We're also going to be introduced to a fellow named Wayne Reeder, R-E-E-D-E-R, another of the people who figures in the Silverado savings and loan failure, another person who figures in the Southmark operations interrelating with Silverado's failure, and also a person who figured in elements of the Contra support effort and who is implicated in some of the, or connected to, some of the other savings and loan failures as well. We're going to take a look at exactly how Wayne Reeder intersects with Southmark after that, or actually really in connection with that. And we're going to take a look at the failure of the San Marino Bank ever so briefly. It was in connection with the failure of the San Marino Bank that the three authors of Inside Job came in contact, or came across the name of Wayne Reeder. And in connection with that bank, we're going to come back once again to the name of Mario Renda, one of the key people involved in the savings and loan failures, one of the key people involved in this combined organized crime and intelligence milieu that figures so prominently in some of those failures. And Mario Renda is a person who is going to tie a number of different threads together, at least to a certain extent. We're going to take a look at Mario Renda's connections to the failure of the San Marino savings and loan. It was in connection with that failure that the authors of the book came across the name of Wayne Reeder. We're going to take a look then at another of the savings and loan failures that is connected to Mario Renda, and this is going to be the link that brings us directly to the Drug Tug case and the Lenvest case, the operation that we've been looking at in connection with the articles that Harry Martin has put out in the Napa Sentinel. We're going to take a look at the failure of the Centennial Savings and Loan and Mario Renda's role in not only brokering deposits for the Centennial Savings and Loan, but in apparently victimizing Native Americans in this country by helping to channel funds managed for Native Americans by the Bureau of Indian Affairs into some of this country's risky savings and loan institutions. In addition to using these funds for a variety of different purposes, apparently Mario Renda and the milieu involved here have been responsible for a lot of money being managed on behalf of Native Americans by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Basically, a lot of that money has disappeared into some of the savings and loan institutions that have gone down. We're going to take a look at that scam. We're going to take a look at how Mario Renda figures in that. Actually, the Native American connection here is relatively peripheral. But we're going to take a look at that, and we're specifically going to take a look at how Mario Renda figures in the connection, in the failure of the Centennial Savings and Loan. And we're going to take a look at Irv Hansen, last name H-A-N-S-E-N. By the way, all of this information, again, from Inside Job. And Irv Hansen is the fellow who, along with a man named Sid Shaw, basically built up the Centennial Savings and Loan. We're going to take a look at how he went about doing that. And we're going to take a look, too, at the untimely death of Irv Hansen when federal prosecutors began to try and sweat him out in order to break open the very evident organized crime connections to this particular situation. Irv Hansen's untimely death brought a halt to the investigation into the Centennial Savings and Loan, although a lot of dirt was uncovered. Basically, the investigation was terminated with the termination, whether a natural or, as I suspect, arranged termination, of Irv Hansen. Then we're going to take a look at the assistant U.S. attorney who was involved with investigating and prosecuting the Centennial Savings and Loan situation, and that is the aforementioned Peter Robinson. Peter Robinson, who worked under Joseph Russaniello, who we've already looked at in a big way in this particular series, Peter Robinson is now the attorney for Charles Duck, the bankruptcy trustee for the Lenvest Company, one of the companies involved at the business end of the Drug Tug case. Now, Peter Robinson, interestingly enough, represented Charles Duck, a person who was the subject of an investigation begun by his office a few years before. He began representing Charles Duck in an illegal way because he had not waited long enough between his retirement as assistant U.S. attorney and the period in which he went to work as the counsel for Charles Duck. I've forgotten offhand just how many years you have to wait, but he did not wait the requisite period of time. And it's interesting to note that Peter Robinson, who had previously been in charge with nominally investigating and investigating the Centennial Savings and Loan failure and prosecuting the people responsible, he moved into the former headquarters, the former offices of Centennial Savings and Loan, in a building called the Stone House. He made their offices his office, and that sort of relationship appears to characterize an awful lot of the operations of Peter Robinson. He appears to be a fox who, to a certain extent at least, has been in charge with guarding the chickens. And we're going to take a look at Peter Robinson and his ambivalent relationship, or his puzzling relationship, with the Centennial Savings and Loan. He appears to be both friend and foe. And in turn, we're going to take a look at how exactly that intersects with the drug tug case. We're going to take a look at Charles Duck, one of the interesting people that Peter Robinson represents, and we're going to take a look at Charles Duck's intersection with the Centennial Savings and Loan. And we're also going to take a look at the money loaned to Democratic Congressman Doug Bosco. Bosco is the person who represents the district in which Napa is located. Bosco borrowed quite heavily from Centennial Savings and Loan and Irv Hansen. And interestingly enough, Doug Bosco was one of the people who raised the loudest howl when the savings and loan crisis began to be investigated by Congress. He was one of the people that protested that this investigation was untoward in some ways. And he also, as we looked at in our Drug Tug Len Vest series, he was also one of the people who was a signatory, one of the 17 congresspersons, who was a signatory to the letter basically encouraging President Oscar Arias of Costa Rica to go light on John Hull. And John Hull, of course, a key person involved both apparently in the Contra support effort and drug smuggling on behalf of the Contras, certainly a person who figures in a big way in both the Kerry Subcommittee's report, the Christic Institute's investigation, and last but most assuredly not least, the drug tug case. So whether or not there is any connection between Doug Bosco, his loans at the Centennial Savings and Loan, his role in attempting to block the congressional investigation of the SNL crisis, and his role in, shall we say, attempting to moderate the investigation or the prosecution of John Hull by Oscar Arias, well, we will take a look at all of those things and ask the musical question whether or not those things are, in fact, connected. And that's what we have on tap for this evening. We're going to take a short musical break, and then we are actually going to begin the reading of the record. Back in a few. Well, good evening. Welcome back once again to One Step Beyond. It's time now to actually begin the reading and analysis of the various portions of text that are going into tonight's archive program. Now, as has been the case with the rest of the installments in this particular series on the CIA connection to the SNL scandal, much of the credit goes to a listener who has been diligently supplying me, and through me, you, with the relevant articles that have been put out by the Houston Post, and specifically that have been authored by their investigative reporter, Pete Bruton. And again, his last name, Brewton. For lack of a better name, or for purposes of anonymity, we will refer to this listener and research credit for the following article as for all of the articles from the Houston Post to this very diligent listener, who I have nicknamed our Savings and Loan Ranger. And again, research credit on this first article goes to our Savings and Loan Ranger. This particular article is going to take up with the same cast of characters and some of the same elements as an article which figured very prominently in the first installment in this particular series. This article comes from the Houston Post of February 8th of 1990, and this article, just like another one that we dealt with from the same date, February 8th, 1990, deals with a fellow named Farhad Azima and an airline called Global International Airways, identified in the other article from the Houston Post of February 8th, 1990, as basically the air arm of the Eatsco company. That was an arms trafficking company put together by Edwin Wilson and some of his key associates in order to profit through the trafficking of arms to Egypt pursuant to some of the agreements signed by Egypt and Israel under the Camp David Accords of the late 1970s. And again, some of the key people involved in the Eatsco operation are some of the key players involved in the Iran-Contra scandal and some of the key people termed by the Christic Institute the secret team. Now, we're going to be looking at a number of connections here of Global International Airways, and many of the names that we're going to be looking at, again, intersect with each other. The dizzying tangle of names that I referred to earlier is illustrated in a very significant way by this particular article. Again, a flowchart of this particular story goes of this article goes in a circular fashion. Now, Global International Airways and Farahad Azima, A-Z-I-M-A, are some of the key names that we're looking at here. Now, both Farahad Azima and Global International Airways figured prominently in the other article from the same date in the Houston Post. Recall that we looked at the relationship there between Global and between Farahad Azima and the failure of the Indian Springs State Bank of Kansas City, Kansas, and two of the key names involved with Global and Indian Springs State Bank. That basically was, our two of the key names were Anthony Russo and Mario Renda. And in addition to Global International Airways, Mario Renda is going to crop up again this evening in this particular article, as is Farahad Azima. We also took a look at relationships between the elements involved in the Iran-Contra scandal, but specifically Southern Air Transport and Race Airlines and Global International Airways. And in turn, again, we looked at the interrelationship or the relationship between EATSCO and Global. And so, again, in the last article, we took a look at the relationships between Global and Race Airlines and also between Global and Southern Air Transport. They had a maintenance arrangement. This evening, we're going to be looking at connecting links between Global and Response Air, also Ransom Aircraft. So we have two R's, Response Air and Ransom Aircraft. Those two are closely related. We are going to look at their relationship to Global International Airways and Farahad Azima, and in turn the connections between those elements and the failure of the Sunbelt Savings and Loan. Okay, the Sunbelt Savings and Loan, nicknamed the Gunbelt Savings and Loan, is one of the SNL failures here that's at least in part owes it can be attributed to this particular cast of characters and to the institutions in and around Global International Airways. Now, one of the people, too, that is connected to the failure of the Sunbelt, nicknamed the Gunbelt Savings and Loan, is the aforementioned Herman K. Beebe, B-E-E-B-E. And we're also going to take a look, in addition to the relationship between some of the elements involved in the failure of the Sunbelt Savings and Loan and Global, and the relationship between Global and Response and Ransom Air, we're going to take a look, too, at the relationship between Global and Buffalo Airways, and the relationship between Morris Jaffe, Carlos Marcello, and in particular, the relationship between Morris Jaffe and Jim Wright, the former House Majority Leader, and the fellow whose resignation was forced in part because of his relationship with the Jaffes. It's interesting that Democrats seem to be taking a lot of political heat for their particular, justified political heat for their connections to some of these scams, but the same scams intersect with Republicans who do not take the same amount of heat. But anyway, we're going to take a look at how Jim Wright came down as a result of his relationship with Morris Jaffe, and in turn how Morris Jaffe figures in connection with Global, with Azima and Company, and when in turn with Buffalo Airways. Now, Buffalo Airways, in addition to Global, Response, and Ransom, is another of these air companies which intersects not only, again, the Global Buffalo intersects in certain respects with Global, Ransom, and Response. It also is, well, I shouldn't say it's directly involved, but it figures in the background of the Iran-Contra scandal. According to one investigator, the transport plane that Eugene Hassenfuss was flying in when he was shot down was originally secured by a company which is strong, which intersects with Buffalo Airways. Specifically, the same person incorporated Buffalo as incorporated Global Jet Sales, and Global Jet Sales is controlled by the same fellow who controls Ransom Air, which intersects with Global. Again, these connections get quite dizzying, and with this particular flow chart is a circular one. I'm going to read the entire article so that all of the text will be verbally represented for you. I think that you'll find that diagramming or working out some sort of visual representation is the best way to keep track of a lot of these connections, because they literally are circular and as such dizzying. And again, at the risk of perhaps boring some listeners, and if you're getting bored now, you're in for a rough evening, because I'm going to repeat this throughout the course of the broadcast this evening. But one of the major points of confusion, potentially, is also, in my mind, one of the major points of understanding, and that is the incredible number of names and elements which intersect, and although any one of these intersections might not be very significant, it might lead an observer to say, well, what the heck, you know, there are more crooks than there are banks, so certainly you're going to get some of the same crooks banking at some of the same banks. But when you see all of these elements and how they hook up with each other and how they hook up with so many of this country's failed savings and loan institutions, the very elements which could confuse you because of their number and diversity at the same time are, to my way of thinking, one of the most telling points and one of the surest indications that all of these names and all of these people, all of these names and all of these institutions could not keep cropping up in the same contexts unless they were all basically part of the same operation, albeit not a monolithic operation. And that really is the central point of the broadcast this evening. So, in we go. We wade now into the tangle of operations surrounding Farhad Azima, and again, we're going to look at just how this particular tangle intersects with elements involved in the Iran-Contra scandal. Many of these same names are going to wind through many of the failed savings and loans that we're going to be looking at this evening. Again, research credit on the following article goes to that listener whom I have nicknamed our Savings and Loan Ranger. This is from the Houston Post of February 8, 1990. It was authored by Pete Bruton, copyright by the Houston Post. It's headlined, Azima No Stranger to Texas Business. Subheaded, Long Trail of Investments Leads to Dallas, San Antonio, and Waco. And it reads as follows. Farhad Azima and his Global International Airways have several business connections to Texas, including a large failed savings and loan in Dallas, a noted San Antonio father and son, and a small cargo airline in Waco. One of Global's more interesting suppliers and bankruptcy creditors was a California company called Response Air, which borrowed $19.5 million for aircraft parts from Sunbelt Savings in Dallas, one of the largest failed institutions in Texas. Response filed a claim against Global in its bankruptcy case for $155,055 for aircraft parts. Global's bankruptcy lawyers responded with a request that the court void payments of $93,962 for airplane parts Global made to Response within 90 days before the bankruptcy filing. Response officials could not be located for court action, and documents filed by the bankruptcy attorneys state that Response had forfeited its California corporate charter for failure to pay taxes and, quote, is the subject of an investigation by the IRS, unquote. Financing statements and mortgage documents on file in Texas and Florida show that a Dallas-based company, the now-defunct Ransom Aircraft, consigned about $19.5 million of new and used DC-8 aircraft parts to Response Air in October of 1983. The financing for these parts was provided by Sunbelt Service Corporation, a subsidiary of Sunbelt Savings. Sources close to Sunbelt said the $19.5 million loan was never paid off and went into Sunbelt's huge grab bag of delinquent and defaulted loans. Sunbelt was merged with seven other insolvent thrifts in 1988 at an estimated cost to the federal government of $2 to $3 billion. Let me interrupt the article at this point. So far, we have looked at how Global International Airways, again, the air arm of ITSCO, or so identified in a previous or Houston Post article that we looked at in the first installment of this broadcast, Global International Airways, the air arm of ITSCO, according to that account, intersects here, has done business with Response Air of California, and in turn, Ransom Aircraft, in connection with their $19.5 million of aircraft parts. Ransom Aircraft is also involved with the Response Global relationship. And in turn, that $19.5 million comes out of Sunbelt Savings, one of the institutions which goes down in part as a result of the bad loan to Global. We now continue with the text of the Houston Post article. And again, I'm interrupting here to illustrate these relationships as we go, because the tangle of names and institutions here is going to grow more complex. Continuing with the Houston Post article of February 8th of 1990. Sunbelt Savings, nicknamed Gunbelt Savings by industry officials, was controlled by Ed McBirney, B-I-R-N-E-Y, and was part of a circle of other failed Texas thrifts, including Vernon, Western, State, and Continental, that had ties to convicted felon and reputed mob associate Herman K. Beebe. McBurney once used Beebs Bossier Bank, B-O-S-S-I-E-R, in Shreveport, Louisiana, and Continental Savings in Houston in a subterfuge for Sunbelt to finance one of its own airplanes, according to Dale Anderson, a former Beeb business associate. Anderson said McBurney wanted Beeb to finance a plane for Sunbelt, but Bossier Bank didn't have enough cash to do it. So, he said, Bossier sold some loan participations to Continental to raise the cash for McBurney. Then, Continental sold some certificates of deposit to Sunbelt. Thus, the money for the Sunbelt's plane ultimately came from Sunbelt. One more time. Thus, the money for the Sunbelt's plane ultimately came from Sunbelt. So here, basically, we see Herman K. Beeb involved with a circle of Texas thrifts, including Gun Belt Savings, and in this case, basically, he was involved in a scam involving a purchase of a plane for Sunbelt. Remember the name Herman K. Beeb? We'll be coming back to him in connection with a lot of the other main articles and sections of the book Inside Job that we're going to be looking at this evening. Continuing with Pete Bruton's article from 2890. Both Global International Airways and Buffalo Airways, the Waco-based cargo company that Azima bought in February of 1989, did business with companies connected to San Antonio businessman Morris D. Jaffe and his son Doug. Azima said he arranged for his airlines to buy noise abatement equipment for aging jets from the Jaffes. The Jaffes were involved in a controversial gas well deal that benefited former House Speaker Jim Wright. The controversy over this deal and evidence that Wright urged federal savings and loan regulators to go easy on some troubled Texas thrifts, including some in the Beeb circle, that led to his resignation. Once again, that last sentence. The controversy over this deal and evidence that Wright urged federal savings and loan regulators to go easy on some troubled Texas thrifts, including some in the Beeb circle. Actually, that's why that I read the sentence again. It's improperly edited itself. It was this controversy, the article should have read. It basically is not a sentence. It was the controversy over this deal and evidence that Wright urged federal savings and loan regulators to go easy on some Texas thrifts, including some in his Texas in the Beeb circle, that led to his resignation. Excuse me, it's a very awkward sentence. In any event, what we're saying here basically is that Morris D. Jaffe, one of the people involved with Global International Airways and Buffalo Airways, also owned by Azima and involving many of the same elements as Azima's other intelligence-connected airlines. Basically, Morris Jaffe is involved with a controversial gas well deal that was the cause of undoing for former House Speaker Jim Wright. And again, it's worth noting how a lot of these scandals that wash on Republican shores basically seem to drown Democrats only, and that's certainly going to be the case with the Charles Keating Lincoln savings and loan failure, which is appropriately being used to put heat on Democratic California Senator Alan Cranston, but whereas that same connection could just as easily be used to tar George Bush's son Neil and a variety of national security-related interests, that connection as yet has not received publicity. So it's worth noting here that Morris Jaffe and his son Doug are connected in business, or were connected in business, to Jim Wright. That helped to bring down Jim Wright. But they're also connected with interests like Global, Buffalo Airways, the intelligence community, the Republican far right. As yet, they have not brought them down. Resuming with the Houston Post article of 2890. In September of 1986, Azima contributed $1,000 to Wright's Majority Congress Committee, according to Federal Election Commission records. Buffalo Airways Incorporator, Dallas attorney Wordy Jack Thompson, was convicted of bank fraud in 1986 involving Empire Savings of Mesquite and the infamous I-30 condo scandal. Thompson was disbarred before his conviction for allegedly refusing to give clients money they had won in civil cases. Empire was the first major savings and loan failure in Texas. New York money broker Mario Renda, the mob associate who also brokered deposits into Indian Springs State Bank, placed about $150 million in deposits into Empire, more than half its total deposits, before it failed in 1984. Thompson was also the incorporator of a Fort Worth company called Global Jet Sales that was controlled by Bill Ransom, who had headed the company doing business with Response Air. Global Jet Sales, along with a related company, Parmax, initially controlled 12 C-123 transport planes that were shipped to this country from the Australian Air Force in the late 1970s. Former Pentagon criminal investigator Gene Wheaton said he had tracked a number of these C-123s and found that two of them were transferred to the Medellin drug cartel in Colombia. Another wound up in the hands of the late Barry Seal's guns and drug operation in Mena, Arkansas. Seal, probably the most notorious drug smuggler in this country's history, was also a gunrunner, DEA informant, and alleged CIA contract agent. He was gunned down in 1986 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, by associates of the Medellin cartel. Seal participated in an attempted sting of the Nicaraguan Sandinistas by the Reagan administration, in which he photographed a Sandinista official allegedly loading narcotics into Seal's plane. This plane was shot down in 1986 in a resupply run to the Contras that unmasked secret American involvement with the Contras. So let's go back and take a look at just how some of these different air companies and banks and individuals intersect. Again, we've looked at Global International Airways, a loan basically that it got from Sunbelt Savings and Loan helped bring that bank down. Now, the two companies involved with that particular operation are Response Air of California and Ransom Aircraft, okay? Those are the two companies involved with Global in the loan that brought down Sunbelt. We also took a look at Herman K. Beeb and his relationship to Sunbelt, and Herman K. Beeb, again, is a person we're going to be coming back to in many of the other items we're going to be looking at in tonight's program. Then we took a look at Global International Airways and Buffalo Airways, a Waco-based cargo company. Buffalo also is a Farhad Azima company, bought by Farhad Azima. We took a look at those two companies and their relationship with Morris Jaffe, a person who is an organized, who we looked at in a previous article, and who was described in that article as an organized crime associate of Carlos Marcello. Again, capo mafioso for New Orleans, and a person who was very heavily involved in the assassination of President Kennedy. We took a look at how the relationship between Morris Jaffe and Jim Wright, former House Speaker Jim Wright, brought down Jim Wright, although as yet it hasn't brought down a lot of the other people who are also tarred, I guess you could say, by their association with Jaffe and his scams. We then took a look again at Buffalo Airways, another Azima company, and the fellow who incorporated it, a Dallas attorney named Wordy Jack Thompson. Wordy Jack Thompson, in turn, is connected with the failure of the Empire Savings of Mesquite, Texas. One of the key people connected to that failure, Mario Renda, a key person we looked at in connection with the failure of the Indian Springs State Bank. We looked at that last in the first installment of the program. It's worth noting, too, that Wordy Jack Thompson was also, in addition to the incorporator of Buffalo Airways, the incorporator of Global Jet Sales, that was controlled by the same Bill Ransom, who headed the company Ransom Aircraft, doing business with Response Air. Now, Global Jet Sales originally brought three of the planes into this country, which were to figure in connection with the Iran-Contra scandal. Two of them used by the Medellin cartel, at least according to information in this story, and one of them used by Adler Barry Seal and later the ill-fated Eugene Hassenfuss. And so, again, there is no particular point in this article where we could look and say, aha, yes, ipso facto, the failure of a savings and loan was connected with the Iran-Contra scandal. And yet, with the failure of many of these institutions, as we begin to pan away from center stage and as we begin to follow the various evidentiary tributaries that lead away from these particular failures, savings and loan failures, at so many different intersections we come across people or institutions involved with one aspect or another with the Iran-Contra scandal. In this case, obviously, Global International Airways involving the same milieu, what we call the Triple Wilson team, what the Christic Institute refers to as the secret team. We find what could be described as an incestuous relationship here between Global, between Response, between Ransom Air, between Buffalo Airways, between Buffalo in turn, and that goes back to Global Jet Sales, which is controlled by the same fellow, Bill Ransom, who heads Ransom Air. And again, these hook up with failures like the Empire Savings, which in turn hooks up with Mario Renda. And that, again, this dizzying, and it does literally, if you diagram it out, these articles go, some of them at least, go around in a circle. This is the type of milieu that we're looking at, and the inextricable relationship between the U.S. intelligence community and organized crime, one of the major foci of the broadcasts, of these broadcasts, the CIA connection to the SNL failures. Now, some of the archive shows which will provide background material for this, and again, in order to get all of the material in this evening, it's not going to be possible to go through all of these connections and their implications in detail. Radio Free America shows number 4, dealing with the Turple Wilson team, programs 29 through 35, dealing with the Iran-Contra scandal and various aspects of it, in particular numbers 29 and 30, and also the Drug Tug case. The miscellaneous series and the Drug Tug case will come in handy, in particular as we get into some of the intersections between the CIA SNL operation and the Drug Tug case per se.